the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Coming up in a few minutes, we'll talk about the budget approved by the Illinois General Assembly means for education policy in the 21st state. But we begin this week's political review in Washington. With me for that, as usual, is Illinois Public Media's Washington correspondent, Linda Kenyon. Linda, welcome back. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday. And let's all hope it is, in fact, a happy Friday.
Well, it's certainly happy for people who enjoy political drama. And we saw quite a bit of it this week between President Trump and former top presidential aide Elon Musk, who I saw one person characterize this yesterday as saying they can't remember a time when a former top presidential advisor sort of approved the idea of impeaching the president. But that is one of the many tweets and social media posts that went back and forth between Trump and Musk. What are people saying about this?
So much to unpack here, Brian, but I will say that there was a very public feud that blew up yesterday while President Trump was in the Oval Office with the Chancellor of Germany, and they were supposed to be talking trade and the war between Russia and Ukraine. The president referred to the war between Russia and Ukraine as akin to two kids fighting it out in a park, that sometimes you just have to let them fight it out before you break it up. And then what happened is the conversation unraveled when President Trump got a question about Elon Musk. Elon Musk has been very outspoken about the government funding bill, the president's big, beautiful bill, as he calls it. And Musk, who was head of the Department of Government Efficiency, tasked with cutting spending, et cetera, has been blasting the bill. So when asked about that in the Oval Office, President Trump said, "I don't understand what's happened to Elon." He said he just kind of went crazy and then accused him of what he calls Trump derangement syndrome. Well, while he was doing that, in real time, Musk was tweeting. And then it really got ugly with Musk saying, "Without me, Trump would have lost the election. Such ingratitude." And it escalated from there. We had the back and forth continuing with Trump saying that maybe they would no longer fund these government contracts and subsidies that Elon Musk had through Tesla and SpaceX, to which Musk responded that maybe he would just no longer use the Dragon, which is the spacecraft that NASA uses to service the International Space Station, saying basically, without me, you won't be able to get any astronauts or cargo to the International Space Station. And, you know, it just went on and on from there. A very public feud, to use the president's own metaphor, like two kids fighting it out in a park. Only these aren't kids, and there are some very serious issues involved here. And, you know, things may have quieted down a little bit overnight, but I can't say for sure that this is over.
No. Yeah. And I mean, I don't think we even got to the accusation that Elon Musk leveled that President Trump is in the Epstein files, which I don't even know that there are actually Epstein files that haven't been released. But this is, of course, relates to the financier Jeffrey Epstein, who was accused of sex abuse and sex trafficking underage girls on his private island with many notable American executives and political figures who would travel down there. You know, he committed suicide in prison during the first Trump, or I should say in jail during the first Trump administration. So certainly something that is something we'll be watching. But I also want to talk about some of the substantive things that happened this week. We could probably spend all day talking about that very interesting political fight. But this week, President Trump officially asked the Congress to take back more than $9 billion, that's billion with a B, in funding for foreign aid, the State Department, and public media, specifically the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, which supports PBS and NPR stations like the one that produces this show. This is called a rescission package. What is the significance of this?
Well, what this does is this officially codifies the cuts that were prescribed by the Department of Government Efficiency, the DOJ, under the leadership of Elon Musk. And it complies with what was called the Impoundment Control Act of 1974. And that's a process by which a president can formally disclose to Congress the appropriated money that he intends to, if you will, claw back money that was appropriated but not spent. And in this case, appropriated but not spent, because Elon Musk cut that money through his DOGE, the Department of Government Efficiency. And the areas of spending that that you mentioned are on the very long list of the rescissions package. The House is going to have to pass this rescissions package separately from the budget that the president calls his big, beautiful bill, and then it will have to go on to the Senate. So this rescissions is going to affect a lot of people, not just federal government workers, but all of those who depend on the funding that the federal government gives them, and that includes both domestic and foreign aid programs.
Yeah, and it's worth reminding people, I think, that even though we call things foreign aid, there are sometimes effects here. Even in Illinois, there was a big program, a soybean innovation lab at the University of Illinois, that we spoke with earlier this year, that was part of USAID and had to lay off a bunch of people. So we'll see how that proceeds through the Congress. One other thing I want to ask you about is the fact that steel has been in the news a lot this week. Nippon Steel, Japanese company, is investing something on the order of $14 billion in U.S. steel. It was called a sale at one point. Now it's not being called a sale. There are questions here in Illinois because Granite City has a big steel mill, U.S. steel mill, Granite City Works, and it's not really clear what the investment means there. There are, you know, steel tariffs are in the news this week. Can you shed any light on what's happening here?
The president just a week ago announced that the 25% tariffs on steel and aluminum that had already gone into effect were going to be doubled to 50%. He made that announcement in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, at a U.S. steel plant. And the steel workers cheered, and everybody was very happy. And the president kind of turned it into a campaign rally more than an announcement of policy, although he did slide that in and said that he was making that announcement for the first time ever. But will this affect the steel industry in a positive or negative fashion? And will it affect the American consumer in a positive or negative fashion? Steelworkers are very happy because they view it as an opportunity to save jobs as part of this deal with Japan's Nippon Steel. They also each get a $5,000 bonus. That's nothing to be sneezed at. However, if you go through the looking glass and examine this a little bit further, this could lead to higher prices on everything that uses steel and aluminum, from the big ticket items like cars to your grocery aisle where you buy canned goods. And so that means that the American consumer might actually feel the impact of this 50% tariff in several different ways.
Well, I'm sure we will be hearing more about this story in the future. Linda Kenyon, great to talk with you as always. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
It's the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey, and we move on now to state politics. We've had a number of conversations this week about the state budget that passed the Illinois General Assembly last weekend. We've talked to all four legislative leaders as well as reporters and some advocates about the outcome of that. You can listen to those conversations and more at our website, 21stshow.org. But one subject we haven't tackled in any depth yet is education policy and how that fared in the budget. Joining me now to talk about that and other developments this session is Samantha Smiley, a reporter for Chalkbeat Chicago, the education-focused news service. Samantha Smiley, welcome back to the 21st Show.
Thanks for having me on again.
All right, let's talk about funding. That is always the biggest picture in terms of what happens with education in Illinois. Years ago, state lawmakers made a promise to increase funding for K through 12 schooling by $350 million every year for a decade in order to get school districts up to adequate funding. How did that turn out this year?
Well, it didn't go great this year. As you mentioned, that the evidence-based funding formula was created in 2017. And the whole point of it was to ensure that some school districts around the state are kind of funded similarly, because there is a lot of big differences between how schools are funded, and that has to do with property taxes and how cities or municipalities can raise funds, right? And so some people hope that they always would be able to put 350 million in, but for the last couple of years, education advocates have been asking for 550, because they're like, oh, it's going to take us longer to get to 2027, or get to schools being adequately funded if we keep going in with 350 million. And so, no one won this time, really.
Well, okay. So, what are you hearing about? So, I mean, okay. What would it take, or what is the potential path for getting back on track with this, I guess? Or is, because there's still a lot of uncertainty around the state budget. Is there any hope for that?
Well, so some experts have said if you at least get it to like 550, you might be able to at least get schools adequately funded to about around like 2030, I believe. But we know that there's a lot that state lawmakers would have to consider and think about in order for that to happen. And I don't know where that money is going to come from, to be honest. How do you raise revenue in this moment of time? And then also, there's so much confusion and chaos at the federal level. And if tomorrow the Trump administration pulled federal funding from Illinois, that would really harm schools. We're talking about billions of dollars at that point. And so, I don't know,
Yeah, fair enough. What about early education funding? This is a, again, a tough budget year. What happened there?
With early childhood education, what we saw a lot was flat funding. So that basically means we didn't see cuts, just like we didn't see cuts with the Illinois State Board of Education, but we didn't see an increase or big increases this time. And so for the State Board of Education's early childhood block grant, the state board was hoping for an additional $75 million. They didn't get that. They just got level funding. For early intervention, which is a program through the Illinois Department of Human Services that serve children between birth and 3 years old, who have disabilities, we saw flat funding for that. Home visiting programs, flat funding. The only thing that got money, which is also a really good thing, is the child care assistance program, which allowed low-income families to be able to access early childhood programs. And then we also saw an increase in funding for these Smart Start workforce grants, which basically provides money directly to child providers to increase salary and wages for childcare workers because they are paid really low in comparison to even their K-12 counterparts. So those are some good things, even though it still was a struggle. It was a mixed bag, according to a lot of advocates that I talked to.
All right, let me remind listeners, this is the 21st show. We're talking with Samantha Smiley, covers education for the education-focused news source, Chalkbeat Chicago. Let's talk about some policy stuff. For a long time in Illinois, teachers and school administrators have been evaluated in part based on student test scores, but legislation passed that would allow school districts to not do that. What's the story there?
I think that people have come around to this idea of maybe test scores isn't enough to tell us what teachers are doing in the classroom. And I think there's been a lot of criticism about what some of the state test scores really tell us about what students are doing. I mean, we kind of see quite a bit of difference when it comes to race and ethnicity and then poverty in schools, right? Of course, if you're at a more resourced school, you're going to be scoring higher than some of your peers who go to the schools that are less resourced. And what does that mean for educators? Are they bad or good? What does that mean? So I think a lot of people have decided in this moment of time, we should step away from that. That doesn't mean that teacher evaluations are done, and it doesn't mean that school districts and schools don't include those test scores. The state really just changed really one word from you shall to you may use test scores. So you might still see school districts use test scores to evaluate a teacher.
Interesting. Well, Some of the one of the big education stories is all the things, the ideas that were proposed that didn't pass this year, right? There was a proposal to inject new money into higher ed, but it would have favored smaller universities like Western, Governor State. There's also Governor Pritzker's plan to allow community colleges to offer bachelor's degrees in certain limited fields. Neither of those passed. The one I want to talk about especially, though, is the classroom cell phone ban. This was something Governor Pritzker talked about in his State of the State speech in February. You're seeing a lot of this happening across the country. It passed the Senate 55-0. That means Democrats and Republicans held hands and approved this thing. Why didn't it get through the House? What do you understand about what happened there?
That's something that I'm still looking into myself because I felt as a reporter watching the bill, I was like, I feel like this should just sail through the General Assembly, right? I mean, it got a stamp of approval from Governor Pritzker. It passed the Senate, like you said, and also just like it seemed like a pretty easy bill. But maybe I should stop saying that. But it seemed like a really easy bill to get through the General Assembly, and then all of a sudden, I think the last week of session, I was just like, oh, this bill isn't moving. I mean, I would turn on the House feed every day waiting to hear this bill getting called, and it just didn't. And I reached out to the sponsor and their staff and was like, hey, does this bill look like it's moving? Is it still in negotiations? Everybody was like, we got a couple more days. It can pass. And then session ended and it didn't. And so now the question that I'm having to go back to is like, what happened? Were there school districts who were like, hey, like please don't give us any more like
Rules,
mandates to like create to do this with our Board of Education? Also, or they're probably like, we've already done this, like y'all are behind. Like we've had
Well, that could
students,
be, yeah, sure.
right?
All right. Well, it is something we will continue to watch your reporting to see if you get to the bottom of that. And maybe they just ran out of time. I don't know. So, and that is unfortunately what has happened to us. Samantha Smiley with Chalkbeat Chicago, thanks so much for sharing your reporting with us today.
Yeah, no problem. Have a good day.
More to come here on the 21st show. Stay with us.